Well, a very good evening to you, and thanks for tuning in to another helping, I suppose, of Terrace Talk here on Monday evening. And what a fantastic Monday evening it is as well. It's kind of what June should have been, really, I suppose. I'm Donal Barry, and I'll be with you here until 8 o'clock this evening with a very special show as we look back, I suppose, for the main part of the show at the golden age of Kerry ladies football in the company of, I suppose, some of those legends who kind of played it and lived through it, and indeed at the latter end wrote about it as well. A game that, I suppose, in many ways was in its infancy at the time, pretty much unlike where it is now. So make sure you get your comments in and questions in there as well on the show this evening. Marion Doherty, Bridget Lean, Margaret Flaherty, we have a snippet from Mary Jo, we have a bit from Marina Barry, we'll talk to journalists, and stay after 7 o'clock because we have a very interesting interview with Michael Ryan, the man indeed who stopped the 10 in a row. So if you have great memories of that, get in contact, 066 712 3666. Ivan is sitting there waiting for the phone calls. Well, even David is sitting there now at the moment waiting for the phone calls, and 083 300 3300, and Keane is definitely on sound and he's sitting there as well. But first, let's get down to what is possibly the exciting phase of the Kerry Club Championships, I suppose, following the semi-finals at senior level and quarter-finals, I suppose, across intermediate and Premier Junior and Junior. And even the relegation playoffs were pretty exciting. And so to give us a quick wrap-up on all of that action over the weekend, I'm joined once again by Andrew Moynihan. Andrew, we're really getting down to the business end of the championships now, with the final two and on for the senior club final.
Yep, the final will be next Saturday evening at 7 p.m. in Austin Sack Park. You've Dingle taking on Kenmare Shamrocks, both teams winning out their semi-finals in convincing fashion. Well, I suppose Kenmare would have been the upset of the weekend, but deserved victors all the same. It's amazing what a year does as well. The relegation playoff last year, winning that, and they're now finalists in 2023, just shows how cutthroat this championship really is.
Massive. And of course they were annual finalists in that club championship anyway, going back before they ended up in the relegation playoff. So it's just amazing, two games out of the blue you lose and you're going down. But they're not going down, they're going up. They played very well. Shawnee Shea, the main man again.
Yeah, Shawnee Shea was definitely the main man. He was the target man and the leader, and when needed, he showed up for Kenmare, and he was just a constant issue for the Crokes defence. He finished with 8 points on the day.
Mm-hmm. How disappointing do you think Crokes will be after that? I mean, I suppose in the build up, obviously Gavin White was missing as well. I mean, they've lost Tony Broston, they've taken a lot of hits injury wise.
Yeah, I think the loss of Tony, as you said, and Gavin White proved too much of a gap to fill for Crokes, and it kind of showed. I think they were depending a small bit on Micheál Burns for their scoring attributes. He had 7 points, he kicked all of Crokes' opening 6 points, and you can't fault his effort. Mm-hmm. As for, I think they were lacking a bit of scoring power and just an overall cohesiveness with the lack of Tony and Gavin.
He's really shown out, in fairness to Burns. I mean, he like you said, he has shown up for all the scores, and I suppose as a Kerry player, he's kind of shown the way. Plenty Kerry players showing the way in the Dingle side.
Yeah, it was an awesome display by Dingle. Just serious athleticism, intensity, and it was just an attacking masterclass. They shot 71% from all their shots. Mm-hmm. I said last week that they were coming just at the right time, and it showed this week. It was a joy to watch in Spa at the weekend. No fault of Spa. Mm-hmm. Dingle were just that cut above, and when you're talking about star players, and the Ganeys and Bembury just, and Tom Sullivan just show up time and time again. Conor Ganey had 3 points, Paul Ganey won 2, Cathal Bembury 4 points, Dylan Ganey had 3 points. Mm-hmm. But if you're thinking man of the match, Mikey Ganey covered every blade of grass. He had influence in every area. He scored a peach of a penalty and a fantastic point from long distance. It was a kick passing exhibition from him as well into the full forward line throughout the game, and he kicked 1-2. Dingle just never let up. Mm-hmm. They kept up that high octane intensity right to the final whistle. It really impressed me, and I think they'll be favourites for final, and rightfully so. A well-oiled machine.
To be a great name for a Ganey, wouldn't it? Dingle Ganey. They're out there tonight thinking about it, to certainly want to put on the list. It will be an exciting final, Dingle and Kenmare, I suppose, so many county players going into it. And I suppose in many ways there's that added carrot as well, that if a divisional board side wins the county championship, the winners of this are heading basically into Munster and all the way up along the way. So there's a huge carrot for this winner.
Yeah, definitely so. And if you're looking at Dingle, they've been kind of brewing for the last couple of years. I think this will be the year that they've said, let's do it this time. And as for Kenmare, they might have they were the upset of the weekend. They're saying, why can't we do it? We have the star players and we have the quality in all aspects of the field. So it'll be a very enticing affair next Saturday evening.
Yeah, and if they win it, they'll be putting up plaques to Shane O'Sullivan for getting that late goal against Temple. No. them to put them out in the round of it. Four very exciting, well, on paper they were exciting anyway, down intermediate championship quarterfinals. Loads of headline ones, I suppose, all over the place, but obviously anything that David Clifford is involved in, that tends to be the headline. Castle Island's Desmond's beaten in extra time, but I mean, when you look at the score, I mean, my God, the goals were raining in, weren't they?
Yeah, the scoreline, it didn't reflect the massive fight put up by Desmond's in the game. They were ahead for a long period in the game as well, but Fuss's win is thanks to the outstanding extra time. They outscored Desmond's 3-4 to 2 points in extra time, and Emmett O'Shea was that man. In extra time, he got 1-2 and he got 1-6 in the whole game. He was definitely the star for Fossa on the day, and that's not even that's not forgetting David Clifford as well with 1-7 and goals from Paddy, Owen Talbot, Matt Rennie, Emmett O'Shea and David, of course. Just goals galore for Fossa.
Yeah, fantastic goals. I mean, everybody's, I suppose, talking, and rightly so, David Clifford's goal, but I felt a bit, I suppose that poor old Emmett, I mean, under the radar. I mean, his goal was absolutely fantastic. It was nearly a carbon copy of David's goal. He also ran the 70 yards and put it in the back of the net, but I mean, it's fantastic, and it's great to see them, I suppose, in the semi-final. Many people at the start of the year were wondering, could they get out of the group? No, they're only one game away from a final. Their opponents, Austin Stacks, they had to travel to Glenflesk, and they found a bit of form, didn't they?
Yeah, finally. I think it's a Stacks side that turned up for what many would argue the first in a long time. Their struggles, of course, they were relegated to the intermediate last year and relegated to Division 2 of the County League just a few months back by their neighbours, Rahilly's. And I heard from a few Stacks people that the only way was up after last weekend's defeat to Desmond's, and full value for their win in Glenflesk at the weekend. They dominated all four quarters of that game, despite Glenflesk's fight, which was led by Luke Crowley, Tommy Bowler, Jeff O'Donoghue, and of course Sullivan in centre back.
Yeah, they just found Stacks too much, really. I mean, Stacks kind of bossed us. Maybe they got the matchups probably better or right or whatever. I mean, but Sean Quilter had a fine game.
Yeah, Sean Quilter had a fine game indeed. He had 4 points, one from a free, and just a real target man for Stacks. And that's not forgetting Shane O'Callaghan as well. He had 1-3, and his goal in the 37th minute, I found, settled Stacks very much after a good second half start from Glenflesk. And of course, Mikey O'Donnell in midfield, he had 6 points. He was instrumental to the win. It was a mammoth performance, and he had some powerful scores from distance. Mm-hmm. So definitely some stars for Stacks at the weekend.
Yeah, and it's at Stacks versus Fossa. My God, I mean, that's going to be intriguing. The other semi-final, well, the other two quarter-finals, first of all, Legion, a lot of people's favourites at the start of the campaign as well, haven't really fired, but you know, they find themselves in the semi-final and they travelled to Beaufort and they done what they had to do when they won 13-10.
Yeah, it wasn't it wasn't the most exciting game. Obviously, on paper, it would have been very exciting, but the Legion got the job done, as you said. They may have been a bit nervous seeing how the other East Kerry teams were dispatched on Saturday the day before. There were a lot of East Kerry knocked out at the weekend, and James O'Donoghue's injury before throwing, of course, might have added to those nerves. Beaufort fought to the very end, a number of shots at goal near the finish, but Legion defeated Beaufort by 2 points. I thought they'd they dominated that opening quarter. Finn Barmer, who had 3 points inside 10 minutes. Jack O'Connor kept Beaufort ticking with a few marks and frees, but I think Legion's win can definitely be laid down to a solid performance in defence and in the close. I thought Dara Fleming and Rob Lean, piercing runs. Rob Lean was just a big threat from defence all day. He was involved in so many aspects, got on a ton of ball. He's a real asset to this Legion side. They should have been maybe a bit more comfortable. They missed three handy frees, but they'll be happy with the win. They're through to a semi-final.
At least Peter Kane has something to work on anyway. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, if they missed the freeze as easy as that in the semi-final, they probably won't be looking for the final. The other game, somewhat of an upset, Kilcommon, the home team, against Milltown Castlemaine. Kilcommon, I mean, trailed for an awful lot of it. They got the equaliser, Brendan Keeley with his 45, it was fantastic, but it was Milltown Castlemaine that really pushed on in extra time.
Yeah, like Fossa, Milltown Castlemaine were just that team in extra time. They dominated it. It was the one game of the draw that, from everyone I heard, it could come come and win. Milton had, Castlemaine had other ideas. Thanks to
Liam Brosnan said last week was a handy draw for Kilcommon.
Handy.
Hopefully, Liam, you're feeling well this evening.
Yeah, Liam might have to look back on that one, myself included. It's another match that was won thanks to a strong extra time performance. You had Aidan O'Connor, Cillian Burke, and Gavin Horn. He was stellar in the midfield. It was a trademark midfield performance, and he was even moved inside, outside the square in extra time, and he got a point for his troubles. He finished with two on the day. As you said, it's just a different game in extra time. They dominated those 20 minutes. They outscored Kilcommon by 5 points.
Yeah, it's amazing. Do you know, I mean, for a game that was so tight and in the space of a couple of minutes, they got 5 points on them. Yeah, Legion and Milton Castlemaine. And I think Milton Castlemaine will fence their chances with Legion as well. Both of them, of course, playing Division 1 football as well. Let's go down to the gang who are trying to get up to Intermediate Premier Junior. Any surprises here?
Any surprises, you say? I suppose
we'll start with the favourites, because there's a Ballymac person not too far away from us. Themselves and Ballyduff, I mean, we said last week, I mean, any team that takes on Ballyduff are going to earn it, regardless of how much of the favourite you were. And they certainly had to play well to earn that victory, Ballymac against Ballyduff.
Yeah, it was a good fight put up by Ballyduff in that game. Mikey Boyle led the team for that game. They just never gave in. Cillian Boyle as well, his introduction rose Ballyduff, and it forced Ballymac just to dig out that win. At the crucial moments they came through, you have to mention Aidan Breen for Ballymac. He had 1-6, just a serious engine, and they're through to a semi-final now.
Yeah. He's absolutely a fantastic midfielder, in fairness to him, and he kind of always shows up as well, and he'll probably be needed to show up a couple of more times as well. Of course, it's going to get harder as it goes along. Listroy, this time last year, we were kind of all saying, God, they were so close, but they're out now. Listowel beat them.
Yeah, Listroy won't be returning to the Junior Premier Final this year, defeated by Listowel with help from Listroy's old manager, Mark O'Shea. Listowel, they have been involved in a few tight encounters so far. They won against Fieries, of course, lost to for the week before. They're well used to the pressure of the championship so far, and it showed at the weekend. I think Listowel were full of value for their win, and their openings, they had 1-1 inside a minute and a half. Too small a Hibra, as the saying goes. A good start is half the battle. It was a well worked goal by David Keane, and Listroy never recovered from a poor start. They didn't score till 16 minutes into the game. A Joe Clifford goal in the 35th minute reduced the deficit to 1, yet that goal nearly benefited Listowel more than Listroy.
They pushed on. Yeah. David Keane, another fantastic club footballer, of course, with Listowel, and pivotal to them. Ardfert are still hanging around, aren't they?
Ardfert are most certainly hanging around in a true North Kerry derby. It was won convincingly by them, and I suppose there are many people's favourites to win out the Junior Premier this year, and that win was built on their strong opening. They had two goals and a point after 13 minutes. Goals from Johnny Egan from Throwin and Ernan Ferris. He propelled the side to a 6-point lead after the first quarter, and he'd definitely be my man of the match after watching that game back in Clubber. He was involved in both goals and a serious engine throughout the game.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And the final team making the semi-final?
So Annascaul defeated Drummer Pierce's away, and championship drama just shows up once again. Drummer Pierce has had a goal in the 58th minute to put them 2 ahead, but a rally of 3 Annascaul points from sub Aidan Crean, Jason Hickson and Cahal Ferreter won it for the Westsiders.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a real kind of South versus West Kerry. To be fair to Drummond, I mean, to get to the quarterfinal, I thought was fantastic, and to push them all the way to the end, and then all of a sudden, like you said, they got the late goal and the drama, they were ahead, but just couldn't hang on to it back there in Killinley. But anyway, they'll be happy with that performance. And of course, we haven't spoke, of course, about the teams that are in relegation trouble, or maybe in relegation trouble no more. Who were the teams in the intermediate section that were in relegation playoffs there during the week? Some of them escaped.
So Curra were taking on Glenbeg and Carr at home. They lost to Glenbeg and Carr on a scoreline of 1-10, 2-7 points. Glenbeg and Carr retained their intermediate status, and I think the subs were the winning of that game for them. Jason Clifford had a goal and 2 points from Quailam Tighan when he was introduced. That won the game for Glenbeg.
Glenbeg and Carr too strong to be there, but I suppose you end up in the group and you end up in the bottom of the group, and they got a couple of results in the group as well. Curra are down there, and our old friends So Kerry, they're in trouble.
Yeah, unfortunately for St Mary's, two late goals for Ballydunahoo have sent them into the relegation playoff final. Robbie Foley and Dara Sheehy, the Sheringham and Sol scare for Ballydunahoo at the weekend. They were down 3 in the 63rd minute. Robbie Foley got a goal and a Dara Sheehy penalty won the game for Ballydunahoo. They're still an intermediate heartbreak for Mary's.
It really was heartbreak. I mean, I was down in South Kerry on Thursday night and they were training below in the Mary's pitch. And in fairness to them, they were well up for the game. And they were well up all through the game as well. But like I said, two late goals, one to level it and one to beat them. Heartbreaking. The Junior Club Championship, my own gang were knocked out finally after our valiant run all the way up to Tarbert against a very good Tarbert team, actually, it has to be said. Who are the last four standing?
So the last four standing in the Junior, Steam Derryland taking on Renard next Saturday at 5 in Waterville, and Tarbert are taking on Beal next Saturday at the same time in Listowel.
Yeah, it's going to be a North versus South final in here regardless of what's going to happen. Sneem Derryland, of course, doing the business on Cordle. Renard doing the business on Cordle. Sneem Derryland, they took care of Cremon. Tarbert took over St. Michael's Finemore. And Bale beat their neighbours, was it?
Yeah, Bale beat My Van, another upset, I suppose. Robert Sack pushing this Beale side to new heights week in, week out. He had 8 points. And Beale will most certainly fancy themselves next weekend. They're coming up leaps and bounds, yeah. Game by game.
It's going to be a lot. Finally, before we let you leave, Andrew, maybe just a quick look at some of the fixtures and when people will know that they're on next weekend.
Alright, so we started the senior. Perfect. So Dingle are taking on Kimmare Shamrocks next Saturday evening at 7 o'clock in Austin Sack Park. In the intermediate semi-finals, Milltown Castlemaine versus Clearney Legion next Sunday. That's at 2 o'clock in Fitzgerald Stadium. It is a double header that day. At 4 o'clock, Fusa are taking on Austin Sacks. In the relegation playoff, Curragh taking on St Mary's next Saturday evening at 5 p.m. in Glenbey. In the junior premier semi-finals, Ballymac taking on Ardfert next Saturday at 5 o'clock in Austin Sack Park. On a score, we'll be taking on the Stowe Limits next Sunday at 1:30 in Strand Road. In the relegation playoff, Waterville versus Skellig Rangers Sunday next Sunday at 1:30 in Carhazivine. And on to the junior club semi-finals, Sneem Derryland versus Renard, that's next Saturday evening at 5 p.m. in Waterville, and Tarbert versus Beale next Saturday evening at 5 o'clock in Listowel.
Plenty of football
to be keeping an eye on next
Absolutely.
Weekend.
And of course, Senior Cohen Championship just around the corner as well, for a lot of those clubs, and I suppose many of those teams heading back to the divisional boards in the next couple of days, meeting up probably for the first time as well. But plenty of football, and we'll keep you all abreast of that in the next coming weeks as well. There's no favourite. Now, after the break, we are going to catch up with Marion Doherty, Bridget Lean, and Margaret Flaherty, all going well. Three All Ireland winning captains. That's gas. Did you ever hear of those people?
Legends.
I don't know if he's telling me the truth now or not.
Most certainly.
Well, it's a good lie for telling the truth, anyway, fair play to you. But certainly, we will look at some of the antics they got up to over the years. And as I said, after 7 o'clock, we'll be joined by Michael Ryan. And at 7:30, we're going to ring Deirdre Walsh, because believe it or not, Deirdre Walsh was around, I suppose, at the back end of the 80s, not to age her. And she was writing all about this, which is amazing, really, because it's gone full circle. And of course, we're going to talk about maybe the growth of the game, but we're going to talk about the memories, and if you've got any memories, send them in 0667123666 or text us on 0833300. And for now, we'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, last week, an iconic group, I suppose, of Kerry footballers received the Associated Sports Journalists of Ireland's much coveted honour, I suppose, of sporting legends, joining a very select group of, I suppose, sporting legends from across all spheres, from athletics to cricket, I suppose, from equestrian to rugby, but more importantly, they became the first ever female team to do so. So tonight we decided to look back at those wonderful years when Kerry ladies football, I suppose, really shone brightest, with 11 All-Ireland titles. It's amazing, really, when you put it into context, from between 76 and 1993. And of course, in between that was the fabulous nine in a row, I suppose, the year that we thought we'd always win it, and it was never going to end, but it did end eventually. But anyway, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by two very nervous cats at the moment, anyway, but Marion Doherty, captain of 1982.
Correct.
There you go. You, that's on one of your sheets, is it?
It is.
Fair play, you have that.
They're running out the window.
And I have a person who won't speak to us at all, but she's in the studio anyway, and that's Bridget Lean, and she, of course, captained in 1984.
Exactly.
She just nods. She's going to go and just do it exactly a bit. And hopefully we'll have Margaret Flaherty shortly as well, maybe around 6:30, 7:30, that kind of way. And she, too, was an All-Ireland winning captain as well. Marion, I suppose, it's basically getting fierce attention now. I mean, God almighty, we didn't know what you were doing 30 years ago or 35 years ago. Is it nice now to be getting this attention?
Oh, it's brilliant that the ladies are getting the attention that they're getting, but back in our time, we didn't get as much attention, and I think it was easier to concentrate on the game and perform well without the scrutiny that they're under today, between social media, the papers and the radio. It's not easy on them. It's not easy to relax going out in a game and be able to do what you know what you can do, and make a mistake, you're in trouble. Yeah, it was, in our day, there was pressure, but there wasn't as much pressure as it is today.
Mm-hmm. It's gas that you mentioned that, actually. Well, we don't think of those things now, of course, all the media, when we're running around trying to get selfies and the whole lot, and it's putting pressure on the players who, I suppose, are getting to a stage now where they're kind of shying away from that as well. But back in your day, I presume if a journalist came up to the field looking for an interview, I suppose he all either scattered or he scattered around him or her.
Most of the time we scattered.
Right.
If he caught us off guard or she caught us off guard, Deirdre Walsh now was very good. She went, made us relax. She relaxed us.
Yeah.
She used to be in the dressing room with us prior to the going out in the All-Ireland final day, and she used to do kind of mini interviews, really.
Yes.
And get the lay of the land, how we thought about the game and how we were going to perform during the hour. We were fairly positive most of the time.
Yeah.
Because I think we had our opposition sized up.
Yeah.
And we had our homework done.
Of course, yeah. Well, you're a good woman for the homework. Talking about a woman who's good for the homework, well, she brought a book anyway about the homework. Bridget Lane, captain in 1984. I mean, that must have been an incredible achievement for you. Can you remember it?
No. I know we played Leitrim on that day anyway, the day we won. But I suppose my best memories of the whole thing would be 1993 when we came back after being beaten twice in Munster finals by Waterford. In 1991 they beat us in Listowel, and then we went down to Dungarvan the following year, and they beat us down there. But the best memory was then in Killarney in 1993 when we got won back the Munster title, and Marina Barry scored the winning point that day, and Geraldine O'Shea came on. That was her first time, I think, in with the Kerry ladies.
Isn't it a true champion thing to say that you won nine and yet the best one you remember is winning it back? Did it meant that much, Bridget, even then?
Oh yeah, I can remember the 1991 when they beat us in Listowel. I can still see where I was standing on the pitch and below in Dungarvan, because in 1992 in Dungarvan, that was very bad night, and we couldn't score that night. But 1993 was the best one.
Well, we'll talk to a man who remembers 91, 92 maybe later on. Go back to 1982. I mean, the Kerry men had lost the five in a row. I mean, we were down the doldrums. Nobody probably even knew that the Kerry ladies were in All-Ireland final or heading there. You were captain. I mean, what was that like at the time, Marion?
Oh, that was a sweet victory. I was so proud to captain a Kerry ladies team to victory after, was it 1976 they won the last one?
That's right, yeah.
And my cousin Margaret O'Doherty from Ahedo and Killarney, she played on that team, so I was very proud to captain that team, and to get a win over Offaly, who were reigning champions at the time, was even sweeter. Now we played that game in atrocious conditions. That game was played in Borough in County Offaly. It was the scoreline was
1-8 to 1-2 in the end,
something like that.
Yeah, you got a goal at the end to win it. I mean, it is interesting when you go through all the games that you played. You never kind of obliterated many teams. You kind of held on, but you always finished very strong. You got a couple of points. You got the goal, and I suppose that's a sign of a good team as well, that you could that you were able to game manage those games.
Yeah. We never took much notice of the scoreboard. We only looked at the scoreboard when the final whistle went. We played to our potential, really, in every match. And I think it was our fitness and our height advantage over the opposition most of the time gave us victory.
You're one of the smallest cornerbacks in the world beside you.
But I know our back line was small enough, but our midfielders and our forward line were.
It is a thing that's commented on by a lot of I suppose managers at the time, that Kerry, apart from the corner back here, they were tall, they were athletic, they were strong, and they played football as well. The ball got and the ball moved, and off they went as well. And I presume one of the big players at the time, of course, that gets an awful lot of plaudits and things is Mary Jo Curran. And Mary Jo Curran, of course, she has to be in the Camino tonight. Like, can you imagine? Were you ever in the Camino?
No.
No, she didn't even think about taking us.
We'd have gone if we'd known about it.
Yeah, she took Nora, though, I heard. But we caught up with her earlier during the year, and Joe McGill had her on the Women in Sport. And we got her thoughts on that time.
The Kerry team did 1-9 in a row there, but I think a lot of that would go back to the minor team. A lot of us, 10 or 11 of the players from the minor team in 1980 and 1981, those were the players really that formed the backbone of the Kerry senior ladies team. So Mick Fitzgerald, really, he was chairperson of the county board. He was a president of the LGFA in more recent times, and Mick was our trainer there and our manager, and he was the person that, I suppose, brought the whole thing together in Kerry. You had four senior clubs at the time. You'd have had our own team here in Beaufort, Castle Island, who were the dominant force in ladies football, even nationwide, us and Stax, and then Ardfert, Abbey Dorney would have had a team as well. But the rivalry at club level was ferocious. But then everybody went into Kerry, and Mick had a real thing, like that there were no stars or no individuals playing with Kerry. It didn't matter at the end of the day who was getting the scores. Everybody played as a team, and that was, he drilled that into us really. And the other thing about him, all his training sessions, I think he was ahead of his time too. All his training sessions involved the ball. There was very little running and fitness. He always concentrated and emphasised the importance of developing skills, and he, like, it was just natural for us to play together the way Mick kind of coached us. You always looked up and to see was there a player in a better position, and he was always, like, he was a man for kicking the ball in and using the traditional skills of Kerry football. And I think that the golden era, there would have been no golden era if Mick Fitzgerald hadn't been there, that he'd be the person that I would give most credit to. You see, you don't think about 4 in a row or 5 in a row or 6 in a row, those things. You look at the next game and you want to win the next game, and records don't come into it really. You just want to keep on winning, and you just do your best every time you go out. And there wasn't any drive, any particular drive, like, to create records or to do anything like that. It would have been just the next game and to win the next game. And we just had 10 or 11 players that would have played in every single one of those, and any one of the 10 or 11 players would have been equally as good. I would have been one of the laziest players on the team. I hated all the running, but I used to love it when Mick, when it was, the football was introduced, and all I wanted to do was ever play games. We just had, we had great forwards as well on the team, that, and like our full back line, we, like Bridget Lean and Tess Horgan, Tess O'Carroll in the corners, and whether it was Nora Hellis here or my sister Phil or whoever was full back, like, we were very lucky with the players we had at the time. We just had a very good 20 players really over those number of years, and any one of those you could pick out. Bridget Lean, cornerback, was the best cornerback that ever played ladies football. Like, Mary Lane, centre back, her daughter Lorraine now is midfield for the Kerry ladies. Mary is the only player that has kicked a 45 in an All-Ireland final at the moment, and Mary would do it for fun. Like, she was such a good player. And Annette Walsh was, like, midfield. Annette was just a brilliant midfielder. So we were lucky with the players that we had, that we came on the scene together, and we were lucky in the manager we had that kind of got us playing together. Because, as I said, the rivalry at club level would have been fairly serious, but he got us playing together. Once you put on the Kerry jersey, you forgot about club and you were playing as a team.
There you go, put on the Kerry jersey and you forgot about the club. I suppose you probably remember the Castle Island, probably still there on the way out. It's nice to hear that. I mean Mary Jo, of course, I mean, she gets all the plaudits and rightly so for the whole time. But of course there was plenty of players involved as well, and delighted to be joined on the line by another nervous cat, Bridget. Put on the headphones. Oh my god, yes, she's getting so professional. Oh yeah, fair play, Marion. Catch on here, Marion, quick, will you? Delighted to have Margaret Flaherty on the phone. Margaret, good evening to you. How are you keeping?
Keeping well now, Donald. Thank you very much.
Good stuff.
Ryan, hi, Bridge. How are we doing?
Not too well. They're kind of getting better, you know. All this is very new to them. come here, Margaret. I mean, your memories of that time. You also were a captain. What are your memories, first of all, of the year that you captained Kerry?
I suppose the thing was that it was the second year in Croke Park, so there was a certain degree of familiarity. I think that unfortunately, sort of the year before, Bridget had missed out, I think, with a broken hand. So we were kind of going into the second year. So so for some of us, there was a degree of familiarity about it. But I suppose at the time, it was very busy weekend sports wise, because I think that the Nissan Classic was on that weekend, with the final coming into Dublin as well, and obviously with Stephen Roach and Sean Kelly, and you know, winning the Tour de France and everything else that weekend, you know, it was you know, hard to get sort of some publicity or awareness. But the interesting thing about it was that, having played in Croke Park the year before, I think that there was an awareness sort of growing about ladies football. And actually, we were invited on the Late Late Show before the on the Friday night with Gay Byrne, myself, and I think Eileen Lawler, and that, and then on the other side you had the Westmeath captain, who's Joe Glennon, and one of her players along with her. So, you know, that in itself was pretty
talk to us about that, because I mean, that's something that's really been it's a new thing to me, and the whole going on the Gay Byrne, the Late Late, because that time that was the pinnacle show of everybody wanted to watch it and everybody listened to it, and I mean, in the mid 80s it was probably the only show in town. Were you nervous that night?
Pretty nervous, alright, yeah. I mean, it was conscious that you were representing kind of ladies football and trying to put the best foot forward as well, in terms of, you know, representing the game and, you know, what it meant to us as players and everything else. So yeah, it was a bit scary, but you know, you try to knock that out of your mind, and you know, just sort of make like you're just talking one to one with Gay Byrne.
I know, it sounds that's pretty amazing. Of course, you won the All Ireland. You got to lift the cup one more time. What were the homecomings like, Margaret, at that stage? Well, I presume they were getting a little bit better. I presume a few more people were showing up, I suppose, in Tralee when the train pulled in.
Well, typically it was back via bus and that. So actually, typically it was the homecoming would have been actually in Castle Island for the most part. And there was a really good group out in terms of kind of welcoming the team home. I suppose maybe the fact that, you know, it was a lot of the times there were Castle Island captains and that as well. So, you know, you probably have a few hundred out, you know, which in and of itself was quite an achievement. Was something, I suppose, that, you know, as the guys had said, wasn't anything that you had really thought about or focused on, because you were just thinking about the game and everything else. So, you know, for people actually, I suppose, to be aware that the game was on as a starting point, and then to actually come out on a Monday night to kind of welcome back, that was certainly something very new to us. And I think that all came about from the move from sort of the regional pitches into Croke Park. I mean, you know, the playing in Croke Park really created a much greater awareness of ladies football than that.
Mm-hmm. Mary, your first experience of going into Croke Park, we're after finding out now, Bridget didn't make the bus for the first one, did she? She was injured. But your first outing, I mean, like, when you went home eventually and you told your parents or your brothers or your next door neighbours, God, the All-Ireland Finals in Croke Park this year, that had to be pretty exciting, was it?
Yeah, my brother Pat was very excited about it, because he captained the Sims team in the years before that, and he was so excited to see his sister playing Croke Park. It's a fabulous pitch to play on, like playing on carpet. Even if you weren't fit, you'd feel fit in Croke Park. It was amazing. In the whole setup, I think they were taking down one of the stands that year, and then we had the presidential parade, which was all new to us. It was unbelievable.
What was that like? I mean, you march behind the R10 by his band, you see it on television with the men, I suppose, at the time, and you know you were doing it as well. I mean, was there nerves? Was there excitement? Was it great crack? Was it a bit of a buzz? Or, my God, was it so scary you didn't know what was going on?
Walking behind the band, we didn't take any notice. We were talking about the game and what we were going to do, and we were sizing up our opposition on the opposite side. We didn't have as much the crowd that they have now today, but it was exciting for us, and we took it all in our stride, and it was nice.
Yeah.
It was all new to us, like, it was all new to the opposition as well.
Yeah.
And you know, we thoroughly enjoyed our experience there, and even better when we won.
And we came home after a while. Sure, you were there every year then after that.
And going up the steps of the Hogan Stand was even more exciting.
Yeah, Bridget, you couldn't go up the steps of the Hogan Stand because when you won your All Ireland, it wasn't in Croke Park.
No, I won the All Ireland 1984 when we played Leitrim.
Yeah. She's furiously checking records now to find out was she even on the team, but I'm sure you were.
It was on in Timahoe, County Leash. Yeah. That's where we played.
So small, most people forget about where it is.
I suppose so. But it didn't matter to us where we played. Mm-hmm. We actually didn't care once we were playing and once we were winning.
Isn't that the essence of it, Bridget? I mean, and Marion and Margaret. It didn't really care where it was as long as you were winning in All-Ireland, because the All-Ireland medal that you win, it's not less because you won it in the backfield in Timahoe, or it's not even more that you won it in Croke Park. Margaret, I mean, you won a lot of medals outside Croke Park as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we won the first few sort of in Tipperary and Timahoe and the fourth, then we won in Páirc Cuíve, and we had won sort of minors as Mary Jo had referenced and that sort of thing in 80 and 81, and that was, you know, in I think one was in Kinsale and the other was in Tullamore and that. So yeah, we had played and we had won as well then with the club in terms of All Ireland and that with the club. It doesn't really influence the value that you put on the medal where it was won, but I think the point that Mary Jo made, just in terms of, you know, you weren't pursuing records or anything else, it was just the next game. And then at a point in time, you know, when you get when it goes so far, it's almost like you know, maybe a week after the All-Ireland, you're thinking about next year and how you're going to win it and what you need to do for next year. It's funny how it's you know, the cycle of the celebrations tended to get shorter, or at least I found you know, as the period went on, because you're kind of maybe conscious that teams were coming up and certainly Waterford were coming along and going to rattle a few cages on the way, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I've a couple of comments coming in. I'm going to read a few and we'll take a break maybe after this. But Donal, isn't it amazing to think that these women played so much and did so much for a county, and yet so few people know their names apart from a small few? I presume you're well known out in Ballymac and you're well known, but I suppose the point being, if you were men, you'd be known probably a little bit more. Does that kind of come into it, Marion? Is that kind of, is there a niche there, or does it really matter?
Oh yeah, I've run park runs with Ogie Moran and they all know Ogie, but they haven't a clue who I am. Doesn't make a difference to me either. It doesn't worry me. I do what I do, and I don't do it for fame. We just do for the love of the game.
How many other medals have you?
In both sports?
Oh, wait, we'll just stick to one sport
okay,
now at the moment.
I have 14.
Oh, you're 14. 14. Oh, very clever, very clever. I know where you're going with that. God, Bridget, she's really
so
blowing.
So Bridget.
You're blowing up the CV mm-hmm. now. How many senior medals have you?
10.
Oh, well, good. Okay, 10. We'll come back to management.
Oh, we weren't around now in 76.
Yeah, of course, there was one there as well. Another comment. I remember Kerry training in the Low Field preparing for an All-Ireland final when they couldn't get a pitch to train on. I presume the Low Field is the one in Tralee.
Oh, yeah. It's a soccer pitch.
Can you remember that, Bridget?
Yeah, I remember. And we trained in rugby clubs as well. We trained in the Castle Island Rugby Club and we trained above in Tralee. We trained wherever we got a pitch. Yeah. It didn't matter what code.
Yeah. And of course, Margaret, I suppose at the time, I mean, training, you needed a venue and that was first port of call, really.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, like as Bridget said, we were a bit migrant. We trained for a number of years up behind the boys' school up in Clown Lower. There's a small pitch in there. I remember Del was training us when Del was coaching the year she took some time out in the back pitch there. And then we were out in Castle Island as as you said, I think it was a rugby pitch for that, you know. So, and then, you know, at various venues around Tralee, between Strand Road, the Low Field, up in Austin Stacks, and that. So, the club pitch as opposed to the main pitch there. So, yeah, it was, yeah. Wherever you get the space, really, you know.
Absolutely. Listen, Margaret, will you stay with us on the line? Because we're going to take a quick break. The two girls are staying with us. And after the break, we'll hear a bit about one of your... I suppose you had so many great corner forwards, but Marina Barry was certainly one of them as well. And we've got a few comments from Marina as well. But for now, we'll take a quick break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee. Where being local means coming home.
Very welcome back to Terrace Talk. Of course, and we're looking back at that, I suppose, that fantastic history the Kerry ladies have. And of course, we're going through it in the company of Marion Doherty and Bridget Lean. And of course, we have Margaret Flaherty on the line, all three captains, of course. And funnily enough, we had another captain, of course, which they were all captains, I suppose, Bridget. I mean, you won so many All Irelands, you probably all got a chance of it. Everyone got a go. But the one that got to go in 83, I think, was Marina Barry, wasn't it? And here's Marina Barry. Thoughts on those games?
I remember going to training sessions, right, and being maybe selected for the team, but I was quite young, so I had to sit and watch for a while. I do remember maybe getting my first break. A lot of the games we played were in fields, I suppose, or locations that I'd never even heard of, like, you know, so I remember being somewhere pretty remote, and I got the chance to get on, and I was fairly nervous, all right, you know, because you're watching the game, you want to be in there, but I was still young. But yeah, I got a chance. One of the Castle Island girls, I think, came off, and I got a chance to come on, and I'd say I must have done okay, because I think I, you know, I got a start maybe after that. I just played every game as it came along. 1982 was the first year that we started the nine in a row. It was, I think, in Nina. I just remember that mainly for the weather. It was such an incessant day of rain, the clouds, it was black. There wasn't any great, I suppose, advertising or great crowds at it. But I mean, we were there, families were there, and it was a great win. The next year I was in sixth year, 1983, I was sixth year in school, I was captain. We'd obviously won the club, and I was put forward for captaincy, and so I do remember that. I think that was in Kilsheelan in Tipperary against Wexford. You know, vaguely remember that, obviously getting the cup, but there was no big occasion about it until 1986, when we got to play in Croke Park, which, as I said earlier, it was where I had seen, you know, what it was all about from the television in the 80s, game contest between the men's and Dublin and Kerry. And we eventually got there. Now, the crowds were nothing like they are nowadays for the girls, which is great to see. But for me, I felt, you know, I had got to where I wanted to go, the journey that I wanted to, the summit of my career that I wanted to get to. That was it for me. And the bonus, obviously, was that we actually went on to win it. So for me, I suppose that is the big one, 1986, I think it was, Croke Park. That's just the way it started for us.
There you go, 1986, the first outing in Croke Park, 11-8 points win over Wexford. And I suppose it was, what was it, 1, 2, 3, 4, was that the 5 in a row? I think it was 5 in a row, actually, in Croke Park. That was kind of ironic to think that the first time you got to Croke Park, you won the 5 in a row and the men lost in 82. It is amazing. Margaret, the training, I mean, a lot of comments coming in now fairly quickly. Obviously, all looking to book Bridget Lean for guest speaking and the whole lot in the next couple of outings. The training, what was the training schedule like, and what was the training like? I Mick O'Dwyer was famous for running the men all the way around the field one direction, and the odd time he might change direction with it. But was it something similar of the time?
Probably not to the same extent. Thankfully, we didn't have to do wire to wire, as it were. But yeah, I mean, it was very much, I guess, of its time, in the sense of, you know, the structure was pretty much, you know, you did the warm ups, you did the laps and that, and you know, you tried to cut the corners and not get caught cutting corners and that, and you know, just doing drills. But a lot of it, as the guys have said, it was focused on the football, because we kind of reckoned, you know, most of the players were involved in other sports and doing lots of other activities, so fitness was wasn't probably something we had to focus on hugely. So it was all about the football and getting players working together and, you know, just developing a system of play such that you almost know without having to look, you know, where your team was going to be, and just getting that a good system and structure in place, really, you know.
Mm-hmm. Bridget, I suppose the training is one thing, but I suppose getting selected, I mean, that buzz of, you know, getting the jersey or getting the cornerback jersey or maybe not losing the cornerback jersey at times. When was the first time you kind of came into the team? Can you remember that first you checked the book again? You surely remember.
Marion's just checking the notes there.
Marion, your agent. I should just ask Marion, you know, when was the first time. But apart from the first time, how was it like getting that Kerry jersey, going home and saying, God, I'm playing for Kerry next Saturday or Sunday and all that?
Well, getting the Kerry jersey was great. You just made sure nobody took it off you.
There was no other cornerbacks getting it?
No.
What did it mean to have it? What did it mean? I mean, obviously, it's a Kerry jersey. I mean, the men nearly kill each other for it. And there's that obviously leaking over to the ladies' game as well. There's an honour attached to it, and there's a history attached to it, and the colour and the whole lot. So what's it mean?
Well, we lived for the football, and there wasn't an evening Marion and myself didn't go running and doing training, trying to get fitter, get better. The whole time we were training, we just lived for the football.
I kept it. Marion, your first time in a Kerry jersey?
1979 in a game against Galway.
See, that's the way to answer the question, Bridget. Yeah, I can see why you brought her along.
I've no notes.
You have no notes. 1979 against Galway, very specific. What can you remember?
Oh, I can remember coming on and sizing up the person coming towards me, and I said, yeah, she looks okay, I think I can handle this one. Next, the first ball came into us and we went head for leather, and I beat her and cleared the ball up the line to Marina, and Marina put it over the bar. That was my memory of that game. Proudest punch.
Fair play. And I suppose you are as proud as punch, because I mean, that part that you played signifies that you've arrived on the scene. Yes. With that gang. Interesting you say 79, because 79 was kind of, you were in between, you know, you weren't really winning yet, but I mean 79, you didn't win the All-Ireland, 80-81. Who were the big teams that you were watching at that stage or hearing about?
Leitrim and Offaly were the ones we had our eyes on. Mm-hmm. Offaly were the reigning All-Ireland champions, and they were the ones to beat at senior level. Leitrim were coming up in minor level, and they seemed to have a command of that. And we won the minor 80-81, and we won it with ease. Like, we didn't take any notice of the victories. Mm-hmm. Like you said already,
you had massive
victories.
We took
no notice of winning. We just,
you just went out and won.
Like Margaret said, we waited for the next game and to see who our opposition was going to be. And it wasn't even the medal we were looking at. The medals were just on to one side, and we went off to the next training session the following evening and enjoyed every second of it.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying. We enjoyed our football at the time. Today, it's different. The standards are so high today, expected of the ladies. It's tough going.
You wouldn't like playing now, so?
Not in the scrutiny that they're under today. No, the enjoyment is a little bit gone out of it, I think, and they're under so much pressure to perform and to win. Like, when they don't win, everyone's on their backs. And when they do win, they get the publicity that they deserve. I think they deserve even more, because the amount of time they have to put into it, and the, like, back in our time, there wasn't as much emphasis on...
But I suppose there weren't as many people watching you, and they weren't coming back and saying, God, Marion Doherty was absolutely atrocious at wing back or corner back or whatever she was, and she should be replaced by somebody else. And I suppose in that sense, it made it easier too, didn't it? That you didn't have a whole pile of critics running around the place giving out.
Yes.
But you weren't losing either. So.
Like Bridget said, we weren't willing to relinquish our jerseys either. Like, there was plenty of other young players there on the verge waiting to come and take our place, but they never got a chance. Mm-hmm. Because Bridget was out with an injury at one stage, so was I. We kept a close eye on our position. I think it was Siobhan O'Connor that took my position for one National League game down in Waterford, and I was on the sideline that day with my ankle in a cast, But, and she was well able to fill my position, but I said, I'm going back in there as soon as I'm repaired again.
Yeah. Margaret, the same for yourself, I suppose. Your first memory of putting on the jersey, and we're heading into injury time before 7 o'clock now, so about maybe 2 minutes. But Margaret, your first memory of pulling on a Kerry jersey, what it meant to you?
You know, I think it was maybe a little bit later than the lads. I think it was probably around 79, 80 that way. We played, I think my abiding memory was a game that we played up in the Hyde, actually, against Roscommon. It was a league semi-final or something. I mean, it was the most horrendous bus journey. I remember that about it too, but I came on as a sub that day, and, you know, that was kind of, you know, and looking at players who had won in 76, and you're thinking, gosh, you know, I'm playing with, you know, the sort of the likes of, you know, Mary Ganey, and there was Eileen O'Connor, and Dell had been there in 76 and that as well, and you're thinking, wow, you know, this is serious stuff, you know, when you're kind of getting on the same team as these players and that. So yeah, it was something you'd kind of hope for, and you know, but at one level worked towards, but did you really expect to get there? Not sure that maybe I did, but thankfully we made it anyhow, and made a few more teams after that.
Absolutely, you survived for a lot longer after that. You weren't as bad as Marion watching out the person that was taking your place for a day or anything. You weren't that kind of hot about it, were you?
Well, you see, I was probably the one that they were giving out, because I started life as a corner forward, and I ended up life as a corner back.
Oh.
Probably did most of the positions in between, so,
You were the worst type of player, a utility one. You could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Come here, Margaret. Listen, thanks very much for joining us. We're going to let you go. We're going to keep the two all-stars inside in studio with us. But keep listening, because after 7 o'clock we have Michael Ryan. We are going to touch base as well with Katie Liston. And as I said, we have Cliona Foley and Deirdre Walsh on as well. And it's a fantastic show. And listen, thanks very much, I suppose, for all you've done for Kerry football as well, Margaret. I mean, I suppose tonight we're trying to, I suppose, shed a little bit more sunlight, I suppose, on those days and those black and white days as such. But as I said, they're great memories, and it was great to meet up over the lunch as well, and just to see the amount of fun that you're having and continue to have, which is absolutely fantastic as well. And thanks for everything you've done for Kerry, and of course an All-Ireland winning captain. Nobody's ever going to take that off you. And just for the record, how many medals have you, Margaret?
10 senior.
10 senior. Oh, 10 senior. There you go, Marion. She didn't throw in two minors just to go ahead.
You asked me how many, and I answered the question. You didn't say whether they were senior, minor, or club.
I'd say she was a great teammate, Margaret.
Well,
Margaret. Thanks very much, Margaret. Now, after a break, of course, we will be catching up with Michael Ryan, but for now, we will head straight to news and weather.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk, of course, where we're shining a bit of light, I suppose, into, I suppose, the 1980s, when, believe it or not, Kerry were absolutely outstanding in ladies football, and we were winning all Ireland, so we're fun all over Ireland in every kind of patch of ground in Croke Park and Parky Creeve and the whole lot. And some comments are coming in. I'll read a couple of comments. Of course, I'm in the company of Bridget Lean and Marion Doherty, two all Ireland winning captains, fiercely competitive about the amount of minor all Irelands they won as well. And a couple of comments coming in. Mary Jo from me was the best footballer of all time. If she was still playing for Kerry would have a great chance. And then another one, wasn't Mick Fitz the greatest of all time? He was also chairman of the board and president of the ladies. And then a very cryptic one comes in, but the answer is obviously going to be less yes, of course. Is Phil Corn related to Mary Jo, of course? And they're sisters, and of course that's something people kind of forget at the time. I suppose, Bridget, you know, all forwards get great headlines and backs are never remembered, really, are they? You know,
but that's always the case. But Phil was a great player, but people just spoke about Mary Jo.
Yeah.
Phil had played centre back and she played full back, and you wouldn't get past Phil too easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And one that I have to read out before I go to my next guest, because he'll get a good laugh out of this as well. I remember as an under 16 lad having to play these players in challenge matches. When I came home from the game, my father asked, how did we get on? I said, we lost. And he says, don't worry about it, you lost to the All-Ireland champions. were you playing lads at under 16 in challenge matches?
We were down in Ballymac pitch. We used to play the Ballymac under 16 team, and just the great challenging games. We got the better of them. We were a lot fitter, and some of us came out with a few wounds, all right, but we didn't take any notice of that. And some of that was ego as well.
Absolutely. Well, of course, all good things do come to an end at time. And of course, my next guest was the man who finally, I suppose, put a halt on the dream of 10 in a row after his Waterford side defeated Kerry, of course, in 91. Already, Bridget, you said that was a real sore point, losing the Munster final in 91. And I suppose in many ways it took a great team to stop a great team. And I'm delighted to say that I have Michael Ryan on the line. I won't even get into how many All-Irelands Michael Ryan has, because he'll put in club championships and everything there. Michael, delighted you can join us on the line. Really delighted to have you on board. First of all, Michael, before we get into how you stopped Kerry, what are your memories of that Kerry team? Because obviously, I suppose you came at the back end of that and you were watching them and you were getting closer and finally you got better than them. And as Bridget already said earlier on, 93 for her was the standout one. It wasn't about the nine that she won, it was about the one that they came back to win. So what are your memories of those times, Michael?
Well, I suppose my initial memories, when we played them first, the first time I was involved in Waterford, we played Kerry in a match in 1983, and they beat us by about 12 points, and that was bad enough. And when I found out they were half the team missing, that made it even worse. So, you know, they were the standard bearers, no question about that. They were the team, and they set awfully high standards, and awfully high standards, I mean, and we had to really climb mountains to get up to Kerry. But my memory of them is outstanding footballers who were, you know, real natural players. I've never seen a more natural team than a Kerry team. They had it everywhere. They had really good players. They had good defenders. They had a really good goalkeeper. And right through that team, I know Mary Jo Cudden is probably the best known player in the country, but there was a bucket full of really good players on that team. And they set us a real challenge, and it took us a long time to climb that mountain.
Mm-hmm. But you did climb the mountain eventually, I suppose. You kind of had to chip little bit by little bit. But talked about 91. I mean, obviously, that's when, I suppose, the Kerry crown slipped and you got on top. How hard had you to work to get that, Michael?
Well, we played Kerry in 8 major games in 4 years. We played them in 4 Munster finals. We played them in 3 National League finals and National League semi-final. And they beat us in every single game. And I remember that 8 game was up in Capoquin, and they beat us 111 to 8 points, and they seemed to be a long ways ahead of us. And really, walking down the road in Capoquin that day with some food in a local pub was a long walk down the road, because it seemed to me as if we might never get there. But something significant, might sound small, but to me it was very significant. Mick Fitzrang looking for a challenge game at Ballymac about a couple of weeks before the All-Ireland final. We played him up in a place called Newport in Tipperary, and we actually scored 4 goals that evening. I think he gave us all a little bit of belief, and you know, we took it on from there, and we lost a few players in 89 and 90, and we threw on a few young players in 91. And I remember that game distinctly, because we stopped in a place called Temple Vantine on the way down to Kerry, and I remember we had some food, and all the players were sitting down in the foyer at the hotel. Some were sitting on the floor. I remember walking around the room and thinking, looking into their eyes and saying, we're really ready today. Anyway, we got to Listowel, and first 10 hours was the grass was a little bit long. It seemed as if the lines had been pulled in a little bit. Maybe that's not true. Maybe that's
that's for Bridget, I'd say.
maybe that was to see with Bridget. Anyway, after 17 minutes of that game, we were 7 points down. We were in big trouble. And then we got a break. And the ball came back up the crossbar, and on your wall, buried it. And in the case, he got another goal, and we took off from there. And, you know, Kerry got a penalty in the second half, a vital stage. And we actually took out our goalkeeper, and we put Barry Crotty in goal. Thankfully, Kerry missed the penalty, and we went on and won by 5 points. But my, I suppose, abiding memory of it is, you know, I think there's a very significant comment. I was standing beside Marie Crotty after the match, and she was interviewed on Radio Kerry, and she said a very significant thing. She said, for the last 4 years, we came to play Kerry. Today we came to win. That was the difference. But by God, it took some winning, and it took some battle, and it took years and years of preparation and years of training and forward steps, backward steps to finally beat them. But it was a testament to how good they were that it took us so long to get to their level.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I suppose you followed on. I mean, you won 91, you won the All Ireland, and of course you won 92 and you won the All Ireland. 93, I suppose, as Bridget Lean said an hour ago, you know, we kind of came back to win this one, she says. And it's amazing to hear somebody has so many All Ireland medals that she rates this one the highest. 93, obviously, at the time there was no back door, you know, it was Munster win or lose, and that was it. What are your memories of 93, Michael?
Well, first of all, it was in Fitzgerald Stadium in Killarney, and I suppose when we had beaten them 2 years in a row, it was a bit like the first Jaws film. We felt it was safe to get back into the water, but suddenly a couple of more sharks appeared. I mean, Geraldine O'Shea and Marie Fitz and Katie Liston, they seemed to come from nowhere again. So it was a hell of a game. It was a fantastic game, and they got a goal towards the end, and they deserved to win it. I thought they played really well on the day, and certainly it was. For us, we had ambitions to win three in a row, but it just goes to show that even 2 years after being beaten, they still had the energy and they still had the resolve and they still had the players to come back again. And I'm delighted to hear Bridget is alive and well, because Bridget give you a good thump when you're playing now. Don't worry about that. She was a very fair woman as well, but she never complained. She reminded me actually of Paddy O'Shea, and I'm not saying she could drink a pint like Paddy O'Shea now, but Bridget was a tough cookie. She was the original of the species of the girls' defender, because I often think she didn't care if anybody else got five goals, but she was determined, my player is not going to score this day or any day. And that's the way she played the game. So delighted to hear she's there, and Marion as well. All super players on a super team.
Yeah. Bridget, you have to respond to poor old Michael Ryan. What kind of manager was he? I mean, he was kind of a frightening enough character, I heard at times.
My memories of Michael actually was when we were playing with Munster, and Michael, you were over the team at the time, and we were inside in the dressing room. I think it was around Robin that day. It was all in the one day, and Michael was in the dressing room anyway, and he was giving the team talk. Jesus, we never heard anything like it. The walls nearly cracked. He was really psyching us up, and we had never heard anything like that before. Should we come out the door flying? I think we won the same year anyway.
Good stuff. I suppose
I'd like to say on that is the Waterford girls and the Kerry girls, even though the biggest arrivals on the pitch, I can't actually remember a dirty belt in any game. I thought they were real sporting matches. And the other thing was, when the Tubman got together, and the Tubman carried that Munster team, because Cork were only on the way up, those two sets of players went out and they won that Inter Pro, I'd say, year after year after year. And I think it was played to Mick Fitz as well. He gave us a hand. I was probably managing Mick Fitz, the two of them working together. But those players, even though they were the biggest arrivals, when it came to putting on the blue jersey of Munster, by God, they'd die for another. That's a great tribute to both sets of players.
Mm-hmm. Marion, your memories of Michael Ryan? Nice ones, obviously.
He was a tough trainer. He knew his stuff. He knew how to study the opposition. He caught us off guard.
There you go, Michael. You caught him off guard.
1990, 91. And 91 and 92. But we got the better of him in 93.
Actually, Mary, those defeats, I mean, you were so used to winning. Sure, you were winning for fun. And you said earlier, we played for fun and we won. Winning was just kind of a part of it. But it was for fun we played, and for friendship and the whole lot. What were those two defeats like? Because you weren't used to losing. All of a sudden, you lost. And
those defeats were like losing your family. And all that went through my head was, what am I going to do for the rest of the year? Because we weren't going to be meeting up until after Christmas, when the National League started up again. And I said, oh my God. And I remember coming off the field in Listowel. Nothing went right for us that day. Nothing. If we were still there, we wouldn't put the ball over the bar. Coming off the field, and I was inconsolable. Nobody could console me. And Mary Jo came up and she says, but isn't it about time somebody else got a chance? And I looked at her and I said, she's not right in the head at all. But I thought about it afterwards, I said, you know what, it's about time we did give somebody else a chance. And fair dues to Waterford, they went off and they finished off.
And they were a great team. I mean, they won four of the next five All-Irelands. I mean, it wasn't.
And like Michael said, we were like a family with them. Even today when we meet up, it's like yesterday with the stories we tell one another. Like, they're a fabulous bunch, the Waterford team. Lovely friends.
Yeah, and of course, Michael, that's what it's about, really. I mean, we're all involved in ladies football and we all want to win, and we try and pull every trigger out of the book that you can. But I mean, the fact about it is it's the strength of the friendships and the bonds that you make for years and years afterwards. I mean, that's the real All-Ireland medal, Mike, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. And, you know, while you're playing the game, you do everything you can to win reasonably within the bounds of the rules. And after that, then, you know, I still hear the Orion Twins talk about the Kerry players. They actually revere them. They almost had too much respect for them. And some of our players, I mean, they almost had too much respect for Kerry. That was my job to knock some of that out. But you know, it's lovely to hear. And I know that they've met a few times since, bits and pieces. It's almost a pity they couldn't be a reunion of both teams. You know, something simple could be arranged, maybe sometime over the winter, that both teams would be together, because there'd be a lot of good stories to be told. And it's a measure of both sets of players. And that's the most important thing of all, because you're dealing with quality people on both sides, top-class players, best players in the country, who did everything they could, who prepared well, who trained hard, who played the game fairly, and above all, and this deserves to be said, played some brilliant football. I mean, some of that football was almost, I suppose, in today's terms, would be term naive. There was nobody went out to stop anybody. Everybody went out to win the game. I often watch coaches there when I watch teams. The first thing they go out to is not to lose. They don't go out to win the game. But both of those teams were sporting. They played to win the game, and they played good football, and the quality of the football. It's only a pity that the games wouldn't be televised in those days, because they were super matches by super players on both sides.
Yeah, super. Now we're going to have Katie Listen coming on the phone there around 7:15. Just very shortly now, hopefully. Mike, listen, thanks very much. One final question before you go. Bridget's been dying to think. Did you ever see Bridget Lean get a red card?
Be very careful. Michael.
There's one common friend that you both have.
Yeah.
He's a Cork man that pretends to be a Wexford man.
Oh, Pat Quinn.
Exactly. I think you're wrong me one there, Michael. He gave me a red card.
Well, I can think of Bridget, you being the saint that you're not. It must have been a serious case of mistake, I think.
That's what I said as well.
Well, listen, thanks very much, Michael, and thanks for joining us this evening. You know, it's fantastic to relive the memories, and of course it's nice to share, I suppose, the spotlight on Watford side as well, because it grows the sport as well. It's just all about Kerry and moving on. And of course, as Bridget said, it was great to get back to 93 as well. Michael, thanks very much, and continued success. You're going well, are you in the hurling championship?
No, we were beaten by Ballygunner yesterday. I mean, they beat by 7 or 8 points. They were a super team at the moment, and we're doing our best, and we have a good football team here. We're trying to win the football for 3 in a row and managing both those teams as well. So I'm a fella who's never got sense. But just one last thing I'd like to say to the people of Kerry who are listening in here tonight. A lot of people won't realise how good that group of players were, and you know, they were a fantastic team, and I just hope that, you know, people will bring back memories and people will talk about it, and because they were the team, no question about that. And they talk about great teams since that. Yeah. Kerry team was as good a team as ever put on boots, and delighted to be paying a small tribute to them, and also delighted we beat them in the end, by the way.
Fair play to you, Michael. Right now, let's get the last punch in. We'll take a quick commercial break.
God bless.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk here on Radio Kerry. To be fair, the time is absolutely flying, but we're having a great time as well, of course, in the company of Bridget Lean and Marion Doherty, with her file of facts, figures and books and the whole lot. And in fairness to Bridget Lean, she came with a page and a bit of a virus, so she remembers most of it. Of course, we were listening to Michael Ryan, of course, there just before the break, of course, he of the Watford fame, who stopped, of course, he stopped the 10 in a row, of course. That's why we had him on. It was very interesting. Bridget said earlier the most important All-Ireland that she won out of the whole lot of them was none of the 9 in a row. It was the one in 1993. And on the line, I'm delighted to have a player who played in 1993. And somebody at Bridget Lean said she was a young one at the time. You know, I don't know if she was a young one at the time anymore. But Katie, listen, we're delighted to have you on the line. We finally tracked you down. First of all, I suppose it's great to have you here with us. And of course, we're shining a little bit of light back on those stages. And of course, we had a little bit from Mary Jo, we had a bit from Marina, Margaret Flaherty, breaking to the nation that she was actually interviewed by Gay Byrne on the Late Late Show in 1987 as well, which was absolutely fantastic. But for you, as a younger player coming in, I suppose, at the back, and Michael Ryan alluded to it, that in 91 we beat him, but in 93 it was like Jaws, he said, you know, it was like the sequel. They had a couple of more sharks in the sea, and Geraldine O'Shea, and he included yourself as well, and Marie Fitz and that. What's it like to look back now and look at those memories and the ones that you shared with, I suppose, players of outstanding quality?
I feel very privileged, Donal, and it's lovely to hear Marion and Bridget and Margaret and all the others chatting away as well, because I played in 89 and 90, and then obviously we had that break in 91, 92, and we all made a very big effort, especially the older players that had been on that team for a longer time, to try and reclaim some lost ground in 93. So at that stage, the coaches were trying to bring through some of the so-called younger players. But can you imagine what it was like, Donal? I was 17 in 1989, and I was coming on to this panel. We'd a very good Kerry under 16 team the year before, and we lost the All-Ireland by a point. And I was being brought through very carefully, I have to say, by the coaches as well. And looking at the likes of Marion and Bridget, Mary Jo, Phil, Margaret Lawler, Eileen Lawler, all of the established players. And all you could do in that environment was flourish, Donal, because the system was in place. Some of these players were ahead of their time, in my view, in terms of the ways that they prepared for games. I mean, I can think of Marion, who was training in other sports. Marion was doing gym work in her off-season before anybody ever thought about it. Kathleen Curran was playing a different sport to improve, and she already brought that to her goalkeeping. You know, her hand-eye coordination was absolutely phenomenal. Mary Jo was playing basketball. When I moved to Dublin, I was joining in with the likes of Marina, Eileen Lawler and Phil, and myself. We would all meet out in the Phoenix Park, and we were trained by Eileen's boyfriend at the time, Brendan, who went on to become her husband, and made both of them made a very good contribution to ladies Gaelic football in Meath. So if you were any young player looking to set a standard, if you watched these players carefully, if you observed how they conducted themselves, and more than that, if you listened to how deadly they were in being able to assess an opposition and how to maximise your strength, you could do nothing but flourish in that kind of environment, Donald. So I genuinely feel very privileged to be able to say that I contributed a little part to that 9 in a row and to the 10 titles overall.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's absolutely fantastic. Katie, I suppose, go back to something that you touched on. I wasn't going on this direction, but as a 17-year-old going in there, and you name-tagged all the great players and the whole lot, were they fearsome? Were they friendly? Were they, you're part of the gang, you've got the jersey, or as Bridget Lean said earlier, it's my jersey and you're not getting it?
Well, Bridget was tough. Let's just say, you know, that tough but fair. I mean, I listened to some of the clips you played from Mary Jo earlier. My club that I joined on was Abbey Dorney in North Kerry, so that was the nearest Kerry club. I'm from West Limerick, but I went to school in Tarbert, so that's how I became involved in Kerry. And the club rivalry was very fierce. I mean, Castle Island won the All-Ireland club titles for how many years in the 1980s before Ballymacarbery, Michael Ryan's team that you've just interviewed, took that over and set the standards in the 1990s. And so, because there was a smaller number of clubs, each of us got to know each other very well in the context of the club scene, but we knew how important it was to be able to work together as a team when it came to the county setup. So yeah, I mean, the rivalries were fierce in the clubs, and inevitably in some of the club games, you knew, of course, that you were going to have the responsibility to mark some of the bigger players, the players that you knew about and trained with on the county team, but for the purposes of the club game, you were going out to do your best in that particular jersey. And I mean, my standard bearer, depending on the position I played in, was typically the midfielders or probably some of the half forwards, and all I did was try and make sure that I could dispossess Mary Jo, because that was a feat in and of itself when she was at her peak, and try to learn from all these other players. But that was put aside when we came back to the county panel.
And of course, it's interesting now because obviously, I suppose you keep a huge interest in the game now at the moment. And there's that fantastic piece that was rolled out a couple of years ago, yourself and Sue Ramsbottom walking around Croke Park and looking back all those years, amazingly, 25 years ago to 93. And time kind of moves on. But we had the Legends Lunch and I mean, God almighty, they were all sitting around the table and, you know, there was modesty, there was a bit of crack. None of them talked about the winning. None of them talked about how many All-Ireland medals, apart from Marion. She had a big list of them, all right, telling everybody how many she had. Minor ones and all, she said. But the reality was, it's the friendship that lasted longer, maybe, than even the headlines and the Kerrymen, the whole lot. And I mean, to see Bridget coming out of retirement tonight to do media coverage, you know, she wouldn't do it back in the day, but no, you have to pay her to do it. But I mean, it's great, and there's great fun. And even Michael Ryan said, you know, earlier, you know, wouldn't it be great to join up with Watford again and have a bit of fun and the whole lot. It's something that tends to be really gold in the ladies' game, that the memories are outstanding, the friendships last for a long time. And that in itself is something that sets, I suppose, the ladies' game apart, maybe.
It does, although I think it's probably changing over time. As Marion said earlier, there's more and more pressure now on the inter-county players today. I was listening also to what Michael Ryan said earlier about, you know, the Munster interprovincial team, of course, being comprised of ourselves in Waterford mainly for that number of years. My memories of that time was how much I look forward to being able to play with the opposition players that I knew were good players. You know, I have vivid memories of one interprovincial game where I think I would have been playing centre forward, and without having to even look over my shoulder, I knew that if I got my pass right, Orny Wall would have made that run in behind the defender, because I'd seen her do it over and over again for Waterford. So I think it was a skill in the coaches at the time as well, Donald, to be able to allow us to play to each other's strengths. And there's an enjoyment that comes from that, because the better you can play, the better your teammates, and you bring the best out of each other as you go through that journey, in a sense. Now, for sure, we had a height of respect for each other, Kerry and Waterford did. And I have to say, I think I'm like Bridget in this as well. I have very fond memories of 93. I remember vividly 1991, because I felt like it was a home game for me, in a sense, because it was in Listowel, and it was as close as I could get to Lowell in those days, because I used to cycle to Listowel first, get a lift and get training back to Tralee or Clarny, whatever it might be. So this was the closest game, and that I remember vividly, where people sat in the dressing room after that and the utter disappointment that everybody felt. But I could also see the extent to which there was going to be, at some point, there was going to be a response. Now, maybe it took us slightly longer than we would have liked. There's still a bit of a debate about whether or not we did achieve our potential and could have played better in 92 especially, but 93 is very fond memories for that reason, because I could see the sense of achievement for some of the players that had been around for much longer, and how much they were able to recapture, I suppose, that pride in wearing the Kerry jersey and in playing a brand of football that was genuinely about bringing the best out of each teammate, rather than there being any big ego on the team.
Mm-hmm. It's guessed that you mentioned cycling, because we get a lot of comments in, because we're reading as many as we can, but I'm going to read this one because I suppose there's a touch of the time about it, and there's a bit of fun about it as well. I remember Mary Sheehan from Carstaveen coming to training in Tralee late in the evenings. I often gave her a lift to the pitch. She was always in a hurry to get to training. It's mentioned that you mentioned that you were cycling to Listowel and the whole lot, but of course that was the time that it was too, Katie. Maybe, probably not as much maybe in 93 in that hidden direction, but it was a time where you just had to get to training, and you went to training anyway you got, whether it was a lift or whether two of you went off in the car and the whole lot. I presume there was a lot of good stories and fun going to matches and cars and people getting lost and maybe not getting their way there at all. Or was that still, even at that stage, exceptionally professional, that no fella or girl got lost in the car, or no car broke down or whatever?
Oh, cars broke down, mopeds broke down. I mean, I graduated from a bike to a moped. That was my big elevation in life, you know. So instead of having to cycle to Listowel and then get a lift from Listowel back to Tralee or Killarney and then go back and cycle back home, it was a wonder how I wasn't fit in those days with the amount of cycling I did before training. And I graduated to a moped, we called it Betsy. It was a yellow thing that was
barely better than a bicycle, and the number of times that broke down and there was search parties sent out for me going, she's somewhere between the Stoll and Lottle and we need to go and get her, because it was getting dark at that point.
Were they looking for Katie or Betsy at that stage?
Both, I would say. Both. We used to get a lift. I would go back to the Stoll, and Sunula Ruan, who joined the Kerry panel at that stage, she was a teacher in Tarbert. We would head up over Lyra Crumpran to go down to Castle Island to some of the pitches that the girls described there. And anybody that knows that road will know it's a bit of a hilly road. And Sunula would often be in a hurry. So after cycling back to the Stoll, we spent the stretch between the Stoll to Castle Island with our heads bumping off the roof, going up and down over the bog in Lyra Crumpran before we did our training and headed back again. So it was a wonder that some of the wheels didn't fall off those cars, I think, going over the mountain at different times.
Yeah, well, lucky for us that the wheels didn't come off of the cars, and of course the 9 in a row, and as you say, the 93, and of course the 76 team we remember as well this evening. I mean, they trend set it very importantly as well. Katie, thanks very much for joining us. I know we were all over the place trying to figure out where you were and whatnot, but I mean, we're really delighted that we found you and tracked you down, because Bridget Lean wouldn't leave the studio if we didn't find you this evening. Marion was going, she'd find some other person from Castle Island. I mean, she has them all lined up around outside. But listen, it's great to catch up. It's great to share those stories. And it's great to put the spotlight on that time as well. Because I suppose in many ways, we kind of take it for regarded that we have 11 All-Irelands won, but we never kind of really sit down and kind of examine the times that they were won. And that's what we're hoping to do tonight, to give a little bit more, I suppose, light on that subject. And Katie, thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure, Slán.
Slán Gabhal. There we go, Katie Liston and Betsy. Marion, had you any former transport to get to training?
No, I had one man that carried me to training. That was Tony Reardon. He was the selector on most of the All-Ireland winning teams. He was my second father.
So you
picked
got
us up and dropped us off. So
no wonder she got picked on the team, the selector. Bridget?
He used to carry all of us. But there was one lady that was on the team, and she was from Lyre, Helena Connor. Helena, you cycle down to us in Ballymac for training, we'll say, or for a game. The game could be on Saturday evening. Helena would arrive in the morning, but sure, we could be going to the bog that day. So Helena would have to come back up to the bog again with us and back down again. And she'd cycle home after the match.
That's amazing. How many miles for people who don't know?
I suppose that was about 12 miles.
Dear God, on a bicycle up a hill. My God. Sounds like hard work at the best of times. We will take a quick commercial break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, welcome back to Terrace Talk, of course, and we're reliving all those great memories, of course, of the Kerry, I suppose, 11 All-Irelands. I mean, obviously the 9 in the row is the big one in the middle, but as Bridget said, 93 was probably far more important. Of course, remember the 76 as well. And I suppose if you think about it, I mean, people kind of complain now that there's a shortage of top quality female journalists in today's world, but I suppose if you think about it, they were pretty thin on the ground in the mid-80s as well, and I suppose two groundbreakers back then were our own Deirdre Walsh of this radio station, of course, who wrote for the Kerryman at the time, and Tina Foley, of course, I suppose a woman who kind of fought hard all her time to get national coverage. I'm delighted to say that we're joined by both of them, joining the panel, of course, with Bridget Lean here and Marion Arty on the phone, or Marion is here as well, and I suppose in many ways we're going to ask them to possibly to share their memories of the whole lot. But Cillian, I'll start with you first if I can, because in many ways, we probably wouldn't be covering this on the show this evening if it wasn't for the ASGI Legends Lunch, in which the whole team of that 9 and 10 in a row, I suppose, were honoured recently at the Rose Hotel. Maybe tell us a little bit about that event, first of all, and the importance of that, and the importance of that to be included on that list.
Yeah, thanks, Donal, and great to be with you tonight. Yeah, I'm a member of the Association of Sports Journalists in Ireland. We're our international body, if you like, and we have a history of a thing called the Legends Lunch, and the Legends Lunch basically is our Hall of Fame. It's been going since 1973. It, you know, has so many legendary Irish sports figures, whether it's GAA players or Olympians, rugby players, you know, you name it, they're in there, world cross country winning teams. And when it came to this year, we were celebrating the 50th anniversary, and ladies football were celebrating the 50th anniversary this year, and I thought, hold on, you know, let's, why not look at ladies football? And of course the obvious team were the Kerry ladies 9 in a row. So we arranged just a lunch, our legends lunch, and we presented them with another medal, like they need another one, Donald. But and I should say one thing I didn't get time to say on the day was I made a spreadsheet of all the players who had played for Kerry in that period from 82 to 90. We just, that was the 9 in a row we went for, because that's such a historic thing to have done. And it really, you know, as I said, they are the OGs, they're the originals and the greats, because not just because of the standard that they set, but the groundbreaking stuff that they did as well, and the style that they played with, and the way people have taken it on. But I estimated that there was over 55 women played in that period. So we were like, how are we going to honour? We don't have the funds to do all that. So what we did in the end was we picked the 10 players who were involved in all of those 9. But on the day, some of them brought, which was brilliant as well, some of them brought as their guests some of their former teammates, and Kathleen Kern and Mary Lane and people like that were there, which was fantastic to have them there as well. So it was just a brilliant day, and as you know, some of the stories were just fantastic, and just to hear them and to put the whole thing into context as well, you know, because like now we're looking at a ladies football association that has over 200,000 members, you know, back then. And one of the things, like, I'm from Laois, so I think it was probably what made me aware of them, because they kept beating us and breaking our hearts. But in 89, I started in sports journalism, and I pitched a story to a newspaper because they were going for the 8 in a row. And I said, hold on, why is there no coverage of it? And the Irish Times sports editor at the time said, well, go on, then you go do a piece. And I went down to Kerry just to do a piece on, as we would nowadays always, you know, to do their last training session before the All-Ireland, the week before the All-Ireland. And I was shocked to find no flags, no signs. They had actually, they usually would train in the Rock, and they had been disrupted that morning and had to move to the Strand because there was a street league for 8 to 12 year olds playing in the Rock that morning. So the Saturday before the All-Ireland in 1989, they were moved off the pitch so that little boys could have a match. And I always have a little blitz, and the injustice of that really stuck with me always. And so when we got a chance this year to honour them, I just thought it was long, long since overdue.
My God, it's amazing. I remember one of the sub headlines early on, because we done a good bit of research on it. The 1988 final, we're currently going for 7 at that stage, I think. No cheers, no flags, no spectators. It's women's football. It was a brave enough headline to be printed in the newspaper at the time, was it?
Yeah, well, that was the one in 89. That was the sub headline, Kerry Seagate title, and that was the sub headline, Cliona Foley examines the Kerry phenomenon. But the Kerry phenomenon, of course, you know, really wasn't getting the promotion and the size that it should have been getting, and the visibility, you know, that these women should have been getting at the time. And that's, you know, I felt, you know, it was time to draw attention to that. And I was always struck, because I always remember Mick Fitz, their legendary manager, and great to see him in such great health and great fun at the reunion recently at the Legends Lunch. But I remember him sitting down and him telling me their commitment, he said, is amazing, and it's no less than many of the male players. And that's still, you know, that's still what you hear managers of women's teams saying nowadays. They're less well funded, they have to struggle for facilities, they still struggle to get the visibility, and they definitely still struggle to get people coming to their games until the big ones. And they say exactly the same thing. Their commitment is amazing, and still exactly the same as the men's players.
Yeah, of course, we were getting some coverage down in Kerry at the time. Maybe it was, I suppose, small bits by small bits, but Deirdre Walsh was flying down with her pen and pencil, or maybe dictaphone, or whatever it was at the time. Deirdre, I mean, you kind of came on the back end of, was it the late 80s? I don't want to age you or anything, or my God, I'd be in fierce trouble. But I mean, at that time, I mean, what was known about ladies football? I mean, particularly, I suppose, in the Kerry men, you were a sports journalist at the time, and female, obviously, as well. Was it an easy door for you to push?
It was, because I'll tell you, I was blessed that the sports editor of the Kerry men during my years then, my early years of my career, was John Barry. And actually, I bumped into John Barry, now retired. I bumped into him at the dog track, of all places, last Saturday night, where there was a fundraiser for the Kerry LGSA, and I bumped into him there. But John was always very forward thinking and ahead of the time, and I remember it was him very much who was pushing that we cover ladies football. And I wasn't long out of college in my first job in the Kerry Men, and I was, you know, chomping at the bit to get covering
all sport, but it was great that when he sent me to cover, I think I covered three of those ladies All-Ireland, and I remember just feeling so privileged and so honoured to be there when those women made history. And but again, just to be with what Cliona said, it was, you know, hardly anybody, well, people knew about it in Kerry, but there was no flags, there was no chat about it, there was no excitement about it. And I remember thinking, you know, coming out of Pro Park buzzing, and then you go back to Kerry and it's like it never happened, you know. So it's just great to see this year. I was at the Ladies All-Ireland, walked up the tunnel, looked around and saw the crowd, and I thought, oh my God, this is so different from back in the early 90s when I was covering All-Ireland, and it's so great to see.
Just one more question on that, Deirdre. I mean, we say the previews and the whole lot, but you were going down to the training couple nights before the All-Ireland final, but Marion, you know, burst your bubble earlier on. She said you were getting into the dressing room as well before games, you know. You could have robbed the jersey, maybe, could you?
Oh God, no, I couldn't kick the ball. Actually, my daughter is a handy little footballer with Karen O'Rahilly's, but she didn't get it from me, I'll put it that way. Yeah, but like, that was mix six. I mean, it was access all areas. There was never any problem with mix six for interviews, for access to the players. The players themselves were so courteous and unassuming, you know. But like, that's the way it was. It was very casual. And I actually, you reminded me today, Donal, when you handed me a press cutting. I was in the All-Ireland, in the Kerry ladies' dressing room before the All-Ireland final one year. How in the name of God I managed that, I don't know. But again, it was probably down to mix fits. And I just remember the girls were as cool as a breeze, not a bother on them. Mick was way more nervous than the girls.
I can imagine. I mean, obviously the records were on the line at the time. Cliona, very briefly before we take a break, I suppose that the likes of this, we'll say, unearthing it and digging up the stories. I mean, we kind of said earlier that, you know, while nobody knew them, the people that mattered most knew them, and their families and all those struggles. And it's no different. I mean, Kerry were winning the All-Ireland at the time, but a word for Laois, because Mary Jo Corn and Katie Liston said in an interview as well with Sue Ramsbottom there, yeah, a couple of years ago, that she was never more delighted when Laois won a final, because Kerry had beaten them so much. What was it like being a Laois supporter at the time at the other end of that?
It was heartbreaking. Laois lost six All-Ireland finals, and four of them were to Kerry, and the other two, of course, were to Waterford. And they started, Laois only won the one in 96. I think that's what got me interested in it, because 88, I think, possibly was the first All-Ireland that I'd gone to, and Sue Ramsbottom was only 16, and she was our superstar. She was our Marina Barry and our Mary Jo Curran coming at that stage, and our Katie Liston actually always reminded me of her, and Geraldine O'Shea as well, because they both played very young in All-Ireland finals as well. But Sue Ramsbottom was just a Rolls Royce of a player, very like Mary Jo, I thought, in many ways. Big tall fielder, superb kicker of a ball, just a beautiful player to play. She was only 16 and she scored a nearly goal in 88, and we thought, woo, we're away. And not for long after, Mary Jo got a great goal, and that was it. They were well beaten after that, and every single time, 1990 I think they beat us as well. It was, I think, we got a goal and there was a really good Laois team. Like, we had Conway was a really good goalkeeper, Amanda Donoghue was one of our young brilliant talented players as well. Like, we had a really good team, but they were just unfortunate, you know. People talk about teams being unlucky to come up against the great Cork team of recent, you know, of the recent years. You were just unlucky if you came along then. So it wasn't, and it was Monaghan, and we beat Monaghan in a replay eventually in 96 that we finally got one. So it was that kind of a, and I think it was Marion Doherty said to me, and I was indebted to Marion Doherty because she has this amazing scrapbook that she's probably talked about two of them, and loads of Deirdre's reports in them as well, the best reports. Some of mine had mistakes in them, clearly, I was looking back and seeing them. But Marion Doherty said to me, she said, God, it was a graveyard. Port Laois was a graveyard, because we kept getting beaten in Port Laois as well in big matches, semi-finals and things. She said it was a graveyard for Laois, and it really was at the time.
She's a barrel of fun, isn't her, Marion, isn't she? Deirdre Walsh,
I was laughing to you saying Deirdre might have snuck in and taken a jersey, because Marion made that point today at the Legends Lunch, and many more of them as well, that nobody was getting their jersey. Like, they were really tight as a family, but by God,
did they want to hold on to those jerseys and earn those jerseys? And nobody, you know, the competition, they were a really unusual, I think, combination, because they were so tight as players and as a team, but also internally they did not want to let go of, nobody was letting go of a jersey.
And my producer won't let me go to a commercial break, or we'll have no talk sauce later on with Mary Conroy. Dear Joe Walsh, thanks very much for joining us. Cliona Foley, a pleasure as always, and thanks very much, and fantastic work with the ASGI as well. We'll take a quick commercial break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
And you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. Of course, we're jogging as fast as we can to the end at 8 o'clock here this evening. Of course, we had a great show this evening, talking about the Kerry 9 in a row Ladies All-Ireland victories, of course, in 76, and we throw in 93 as well, and that brings them up to 11. And I suppose we've touched on a lot of the bases and the players and the whole lot. We've talked about 86, Marion, and I suppose 86 was the first time in Croke Park, and 87 was Croke Park, and off we went after that. The earlier All-Irelands were Nina, Kilashielan, Tim O'Hoe, but 85 was unusual because it was in Parky Queeve. Have you memories of that, Marion?
Yes, Donald, that was our first time playing in a major pitch. That game was against Leash, and that was a red letter day for ladies football in Kerry. Kerry started firm favourites on that day. Lil Horgan, Mary Jo were the outstanding midfielders on display that day. Del White was top scorer with 1-4, and Mary Jo opened the scoring with a brilliant goal. Margaret Lawler missed that game because of injury. Mary Buckley was the newcomer. She came on as a sub that day and gave a brilliant display.
Geez, you remember all that?
Yeah.
That's fair going.
Yeah.
Talk us about Margaret Lawler, because obviously Margaret was there from 76, and there was a number of players from 76 as well, was there?
There was Del White.
Yes.
There was Eileen O'Connor. Who else was there?
Did Eileen O'Connor, I heard, was when the All-Stars came out, she was the first All-Star because she was lower down the order, was she? Was she back, was she?
She was a full-back.
Yes.
Eileen was the only one that could go out into a pitch full of mud and come out spotless.
Right, okay.
She never fell on the pitch. She was an amazing fullback. She played with Austin Stax in Tralee.
They were very clean fullbacks in Austin Stax.
I don't know how she managed it, but she came out spotless.
And John O'Keefe couldn't do that. Come here, talk about Del White. I mean, if you go through the scoring charts, I mean, Del White was scoring all over the place.
Del White was a fabulous footballer. Great head. Knew the move before the ball was in her hands. She could see a pass from a mile off. Very intelligent player, great fielder of a ball. I think Del played in the full back line as well,
mm-hmm,
at some stage. Very intelligent player.
Yeah. Bridget, what was it like to mark these gang at training, or did you mark? Obviously, backs and forwards was the main thing of the day. I mean, obviously, were you chasing Marina Barry around the corner, or what were you at?
I'd say Marion used to be chasing Marina. Marion was playing wing back. Marina used to play wing forward. Can't think. No, I was chasing.
There was no good corner forward going to her.
Surely no shame. 1993, I remember that.
Yeah. Actually, that's interesting you mention that. Talk to us about maybe the younger ones that came in 93.
There was Geraldine and there was Katie. And Katie was big, tall, and she was into athletics as well, and she was a good sprinter. And Marie Fitz. Marie was midfield.
Marie Fitz, and, of course, of South Kerry, but she was playing with Austin Stax at the time, so we have to give her that.
All right, and there was Eileen Mulvihill and Emily Woods as well.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it was nice to see that many players, and there was obviously a couple more throwing in as well. But at that stage, I mean, I suppose you start. I have to be very careful here. You start in 82 and you're kind of the young one in the dressing room, and then you kind of bounce away through and you have 9 medals and 10 medals. What's it like when you see the younger ones coming through maybe 10 years later? I mean, are they better, or are they fitter, or are they more enthusiastic, or do you as older players still have that enthusiasm, Marion?
The young players today, I think they're fabulous. They have skill, they have fitness, they have power. They have forevision, as well as dealing with all the pressure, as I said earlier. Compared to us, we wouldn't We were naturally fit. We didn't have to work at it because, like you said earlier, we were running, racing, cycling, thumbing, walking everywhere. So fitness came naturally to us, whereas the girls of today have to work on it because everyone drives everywhere today.
Mm-hmm. Bridget, last question, I'll let you go. She's dying for the last question since about 5 past 6. We'll ask you the last question, Bridget. Do you miss it? If you could roll back the clock and I say, listen, 30 years back you go, would you do it all over again?
Aye, of course I would, yeah. Of course I would. I loved training. Loved playing, loved training.
And Marion likes bookkeeping the way she's going. Yeah, she'll nearly take the desk away now with the next slap. Marion, what did you enjoy most about it?
The camaraderie, the meeting up, the crack afterwards, which we can't repeat.
We were told we weren't allowed talking about
it. We can't tell those stories.
But was there a lot of crack afterwards?
They'd have to be censored. I remember one time after beating Austin Stacks in Austin Stacks Park, we retained the county final and we had an All-Star game in Castle Island the following day. We forgot our gear, left it in the car. It was ringing wet going over the road and we were rinsing the socks out trying to get ready for the All-Star game in Castle Island. And Bridget was inside me. She was playing the inside of me and the ball came down and my head hit the ground and I said, oh my God. Couldn't tell him the story of what happened the previous night, though.
You got up, though, did you?
We won it. We won that game.
Well, I suppose as long as you won it, it won't matter. Listen, girls, we love calling you girls.
We'll take that.
Fair play. Thanks, Bridget. Yeah. Saved my life there. I could have been fired for that one. Bridget Lean, thanks very much. Marion, fair play to you. Margaret Flaherty, Cliona Foley, Deirdre Walsh, Mary Jo, Marina Barry, who's actually playing football still tonight against Garty Glynn, and Margaret Flaherty, as said, spoke on the Late Late Show, which is amazing, all the bits of news. And Michael Ryan, the only man that was allowed on the show tonight, but we allowed him because he won 4 All-Ireland medals and he stopped the 10 in a row and the shows were magnanimous. Guys, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Thanks to Keane and Ivan. And of course, there's another famous All-Star coming up now, Tog Sus. Do you like a bit of diddly Irish music?
Yes.
They gave the thumbs up anyway. They were kind of a bit, it was like a bad umpire, you know. The white flag didn't go up straight away, but you know, we won't ask him a second time. Thanks for joining us this evening on Terrace Talk. It was a fantastic show. And if you want to listen back, you can hear us on podcast and the whole lot. And we'll do it all again live next Monday evening.